Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. I'm Mike Sweeney.
I'm Jesse Gaskell, and we are writers for Conan. We're writers, are writers.
Sure.
Maybe writers in the future.
It's a world of possibilities. But right now we're hosting this podcast.
Yes.
And actually, Jesse and I saw each other last week.
We did.
In person.
Yeah. And we saw some of our listeners, too.
That's right. We were at the Wiltern Theater for the recording of Conan's live podcast, his first live podcast.
Yeah.
Of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
That was wild. It was really cool to be out among people again.
Yeah.
See a live show.
It was a great show.
Yep.
Will Arnett was a guest.
Yeah, Jordan was there.
Yeah, and it was a hilarious show. And it's out already.
It is. You can listen to it.
Yeah.
You can hear us laughing in the background.
That's right. But like you said, we also crazily ran into some fans of Inside Conan while we were there.
I know. That was cool.
That was fun.
A few of you came up to us, and I assume you're very hard up for celebrity sightings.
You're just happy to be out of the house.
Yeah. but it was fun. Going backstage after the show, it really felt like old times filming the late night show.
Right. Having a postmortem.
We had a postmortem. Yeah, I got to sneak into that, even though I had nothing to do with the show.
I had nothing to do with it either. I've never had less to do. I feel like a UN peacekeeper. Like, why am I here?
Yeah, what? Because you had to be there at noon.
I think I was just part of the entourage.
Yeah, you were Conan's fluffer.
Yeah, well.
Asexual, yeah.
Yes, totally asexual. No. I'm fine either way. You know, I'm open-minded. Yeah, no, the Conan podcast is a well-oiled machine. So I was just a fly in the wall, kind of watching everything, which was fun for both of us, I think.
Yeah, I know. It was just nice to see a lot of the old staff again.
Yeah.
Everyone was running out looking busy. It was like the props guys were there because there was a fake award that was given. So they
had one
thing to do.
They had to make it and deliver it. I hope they held on to that prop.
Yeah. What else has been going on with you?
Oh, you know, I'm sorry I mentioned, I guess I said I was going to do a swim from Alcatraz to, and that was a mistake to say that.
See, I kind of thought you wanted to be held accountable for it.
Maybe that's what I wanted subconsciously.
Yeah, but now you regret that.
Oh, I couldn't regret it more. And probably discussing it again now is not helping. I'm not learning my lesson. What have I done? Like, you talked about running a marathon after you ran the marathon.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
You don't talk about these things beforehand. That's only an idiot
I know,
would do that.
That's like saying, I'm going to write a screenplay this weekend.
Exactly.
So look forward to it on Monday.
What's going on with you?
I went on a little trip to visit my 97-year-old grandmother.
Wow, you're a wonderful granddaughter.
Well, thanks. I mean, I hadn't seen her in a while because of the pandemic, and then she actually got COVID last year.
Oh, wow.
And didn't die.
Oh, my gosh.
She was in the hospital for 2 months alone.
And she bounced back.
Yeah, I mean, she bounced back to the her former mostly stationary.
I'm gonna stick with bounced
status,
back.
Yeah. But no, it was great. We unsuccessfully tried to fix her remote, and I ate a lot of leftovers. It's amazing when I visit, she always has leftovers, and yet we never have a new meal. Ooh. There's no initial meal. It's only leftovers.
Those are from meals prior to your arrival.
Yes.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Where does she live?
She lives in Dallas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I went, I was too late to make it to the QAnon rally to resurrect JFK Jr.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah.
Would let's say you were there when that was happening. Would any part of you want to go and kind of check that
and
out?
And take a look. I don't think so, because I would just assume that I would get hit by shrapnel or something. Like there would be...
And then your name forever would be linked with QAnon.
I am Q. But you know who's not Q?
What a segue.
Tonight's guest.
Yes. I think that's fair to say.
We're speaking with longtime Conan talent booker, Paula Davis.
Yes. To learn about her, call it origin story, at least where Conan and NBC are
concerned. I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the stuff of legend. Here's Paula Davis.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, you guys.
Hello.
Hey, Paula. Thanks for being here.
Sure thing. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure.
You're also a longtime listener of the pod.
I love your pod.
You got on board way before all these Johnny Come Latelys.
I love it.
Do you ever listen for accuracy? Are you ever like, oh, that didn't happen like that?
No, not at all, because I don't remember. And what's great is I lived it. But when I listen, it's like the first time I'm hearing about it. So it's even better.
Like, oh, what a fun life I've had.
Exactly.
Conan had a sidekick named Andy.
Who knew?
Can we talk about the Day One Club for a sec?
Sure, we can.
Can you explain the Day One Club?
Day One Club are the people, a very select group of folks who were there on the first day. I'm one, Jeff Ross, Frank Smiley, Conan, the band.
Tracy King.
Gina came and went.
Michael Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them came and went.
Right.
But a few of us are still on board.
Yeah.
Andy, of course.
Andy, right?
Yeah. And when you say day one, you're talking about September 13th, 1993.
Yep.
I heard something interesting. I know you started before you came to Conan, as several early members of the crew did, from Saturday Night Live. So before we got to Late Night with Conan O'Brien in 1993, maybe we can just quickly go back and you can talk about your time at SNL and how you knew Conan there and what you thought about that fellow, and we'll go from there.
I'm going to tell you how I arrived at SNL. Is that okay if I go back?
Oh my God, yes. No, please do.
Please do.
When I was a kid, I loved comedy, and both my parents were in show business, so I was very comfortable, like, on sets. I went to visit my mom. She worked on a game show at 30 Rock when I was, like, six.
Huh.
Oh, cool.
And when I got on the set, I just felt, this is where I belong. This is all I want to do. I'm very comfortable here. This is it.
You
so when I was
home.
Six, I felt at home. I don't
because
know.
It was your home.
I guess. They lived on the set. So mommy worked at game shows. My dad worked in commercials. So kind of from that point on, that was all I had my eye on. And then there was the love of comedy. So when SNL started, I fell in love with SNL and I got obsessed with it, as I do get obsessed with things. So I got obsessed with it and I had a friend and my mom had worked in the building. So I said to my friend, Toby, let's go sneak in. And we did. And I was 13.
Oh, boy.
And so we started sneaking into SNL and just like hanging out and watching rehearsals. And I was...
You were such a cool 13-year-old.
I had absolutely no parental supervision whatsoever. You know, it was New York and it was the 70s it was the 70s.
And when you say, did you just kind of waltz through the lobby? I'm sure, obviously, security back then was a totally different thing.
Yeah, people were like, these are children. Where could they possibly be going except to where they're supposed to be?
I don't think there was security at that point. And if there was, it was very lax. But as SNL got more popular, the security got tighter. And Toby and I, that was my friend.
Right.
We had to sneak around. And I remember one time we had to take the elevator up to the Rainbow Room.
Yeah.
And take the steps down. So we walked down to the 8th floor from like the 65th floor. The
55th floor or something like that.
Something like that.
The building schematics, and you knew where you could.
That I did. Is dedication.
I was super dedicated. We went every weekend.
Wow.
It was really kind of pathetic. I mean, we went to the 17th floor and just like sat by the elevators and just kind of like watched the writers and the cast.
That's
and,
where the offices were.
Correct.
Wow. So you were even into behind the scenes back then.
Yeah.
You went right
it's my raison d'etre.
To the Beehive.
I wish you'd had a podcast.
Aw, thanks. So we did that.
And wait, so no one said, should we say or do anything about the two 13-year-old urchins that are not haunting the show?
Not really. No. Isn't that weird?
Did and anyone then, try to befriend you guys? Or did everyone just was like, we'll ignore them and they'll go away? Or
no, we were befriended yes. by Ann Beats, who really took me under her wing.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Cool.
The gentlemen cast were friendlier than the ladies at that time. But you know what? There was no shenanigans. Okay. Like nobody said anything icky. There was no ickiness. Like, for example, I will tell you that I guess there was an election in 76. So the studio got relocated to Brooklyn.
Huh.
So Toby and I took the subway out to Brooklyn. And when we got there, the security guy said, Dan Aykroyd's looking for you guys. So he found us and he sent us to a train store to buy toy trains for John Belushi, because it was his birthday.
Wow.
I feel like you were actually the first interns.
We were.
They realized they could have unpaid workers, and that was how the internship was born.
And we were psyched to do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that went on for a couple of years, but through that, I met Ann Beats, and I started working for her after high school, because I lived in the Village, and she lived in the Village, so I would do, like, personal errands for her and pick up her laundry and do her grocery shopping. And she was so nice to me.
And how did you initially start talking to her? I mean, were you like, hey, I want to work here. This is what I want to do.
We were very available because we were there. We were bodies. And she was working on an SNL book, which I actually have upstairs, which looks like a scrapbook. It's green. And I think Francisco Franco is on the cover of it.
Uh-huh.
And she was working on it during the summer, whatever summer that was, maybe.
Way back then, she was already working on a book about it? Okay.
Right. So she asked us if we wanted to help out.
Wow.
Which we did. It was, I cannot tell you how exciting it was. It was so heady and so exciting to be at 30 Rock, like working, you know what I mean? As a kid.
Did you tell your friends about this? Or were you like, I'm not even sharing this info with anyone because they're going to want to horn in?
They didn't want to horn in because, first of all, I guess it got popular, but in the beginning, nobody knew about it.
Right.
And for example, when Toby's class was, I think it was Toby's class or the class ahead of Toby, we asked Chevy to speak at graduation at this little high school in Greenwich Village, and he did.
Wait.
And we took him out for dinner. We tried to pay for dinner before the graduation, but he wouldn't let us.
Wow. Wait, you booked your first booking was Chevy Chase at your high school graduation.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And you didn't go through public. So you just went up and asked him and said, hey.
Sweeters, I used to call him. I called him on the phone from
Fearless.
Home. Fearless. I knew the number of NBC, which I still know, 664-4444.
Right.
And I would call and I would say, Chevy Chase, please. And they'd put me through. Oh, went to a Chinese restaurant in Soho, New York City, which was called Oho So. I think it was Toby, me, two guys from the graduating class, and Chevy. We tried to pay and he wouldn't let us. He was a real gentleman.
Is Toby in show business?
She's an editor.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so then it seems like it must have been a natural when you were ready to get a job that you were like, I already know everybody here. People love me here.
I stayed in touch with Ann Beats. All I wanted to do was work in TV comedy.
Right.
Really, all I wanted to do was work at SNL. So when I got out of college, I had been in touch with Ann Beats, and she was so nice, and she hired me as her personal assistant.
Mm-hmm.
For $150 a week when I got out of school. And my jobs ranged from everything. Like, I remember my first week, I had to take scripts up to some Broadway director's office, and it was just so cool. And then I would pick up her laundry. I mean, it was, you know, it was a real high-low position.
Right.
But out of that, I was working for a couple of writers like Michael O'Donohue, Judy Belushi, like one day a week. They knew all I wanted to do was work at SNL. So right. a talent assistant position opened up and I was hired at SNL.
Wow.
And that was how I got there.
So your first formal staff job there was in the talent department.
Correct.
Wow. Okay.
That's the other thing is that I was obsessed with show business. I was obsessed with comedy and I wanted to work on a show, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like right. there was no part of me that was like, I want to be a writer. I want to be a director right. or in costumes mm-hmm. or anything like that. And
you were wide open. To
wide open.
I grab you.
Correct.
And did you make the right choice?
I think I did.
She's still I don't on know. The fence.
I really like it.
Yeah.
It works for me.
It seems perfect for your skill set and your
thanks.
Outgoingness.
Absolutely. Will you speak at my graduation?
No, but I think that's so brilliant.
No, it's
like
great.
Before you even knew to be nervous about that stuff, you were already instinctively doing it.
Yeah.
It's very weird. I think Toby might have actually asked him, but I was right there with him.
No, that's, I love that story. And now talent at SNL, there you were. And did you have interaction with writers and the whole staff? And obviously what we're leading to is when perhaps did you get to meet Conan there?
I did interact with the writers. I loved the writers. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I just loved it.
Right.
And I did meet Conan, and Conan was very young.
Uh-huh.
Really, really liked him.
And then I guess he took off to work on The Simpsons.
Then he left.
Right.
Worked on The Simpsons. And then I left at some point and started freelancing.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I met Jeff Ross.
The executive
okay.
producer.
Yeah.
Jesse, I believe you want to say?
Jeff Ross.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you really do predate. It's like we're seeing that Conan was kind of incepted, possibly even by you.
I birthed him.
Yes.
Yes.
I did it.
I had no idea. This is revelatory. And so were you already involved in the show before a host was picked for it?
I was not.
Okay.
No, but I really wanted to be involved. And I was in touch with Jeff. And I think once Conan was chosen, I was bugging Jeff because I wanted a job.
Right.
Did you? And so you heard that Conan was chosen. And were mm-hmm. you like, I know him?
Mm-hmm.
And what was your yeah. reaction to that news?
I was super excited. I thought it was great. I was excited. I mean, I was baffled like anyone else, but I right. thought, this is going to be fun.
Right.
This is going to be yeah. exciting.
Yeah. Were you surprised that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but no, were you surprised, as a lot of people were, that, you know, this, because everyone thought it was going to be like a well-known comedian or mm-hmm. stand-up comic, and then it's this guy who I don't think anyone had seen really on television before. What was your reaction to all that?
I just thought it was a risk worth taking. I thought it was uh-huh. great, and I thought it was exciting, and I thought it was really cool that an unknown person was being picked.
Uh-huh.
But I remember going to meet with Jeff and Conan at Jeff's Broadway Video office. I think Conan was laying on the sofa.
Classic.
That's how we all know him best.
Right? And they were really nice, and I sort of made my case. But again, I was so green. Like, okay, let me just say one thing.
You're so green. You've been working since you were 13. you were the one with the most experience.
You had imposter syndrome. Yeah.
That's the story of my life is imposter syndrome. Are you kidding?
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, I want to say something.
Yeah.
I think like now that my kids are older and sort of like one of them is breaking into the business, when I think about myself at his age, he's so much smarter and like more aware than I was. I was just like, yeah, I want to work here. I mean.
But you had really good instincts, it seems.
I went with my instincts.
Yeah, so.
That I did.
Yeah.
Well, I love this too, because that was, I mean, it's not far off from how I got my first job on a comedy TV show, which
How
was
did you
just
do, it?
Do tell.
Well, I was working for E! Exclamation point for the E! True Hollywood Story as a production assistant.
Yeah.
And I started going to all of, I guess it was kind of sneaking in to the tapings of The Soup with Joel McHale. And I just was there for every taping and I would laugh loud at all the jokes and was really trying to pal up with the writers there.
Right.
Wait, because you wanted to be a writer?
Yeah, because I wanted to be a comedy writer. And then finally, I got up the nerve to be like, how did you guys do this? And they started talking to me. And it was like, by then, I was sort of a fixture. And they're like, oh, she's a good laugher.
That was probably...
That's 90% of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
But Paula, back to you. Did Jeff and Conan describe what they were looking for in the show? I mean, were you in on those early conversations?
Not really. I was hired to book comics and book authors. There was like a main booker who was doing celebrities.
Right.
And then they hired me to...
Because you were such a comedy fan, yeah. You probably knew a lot of these people.
You did it. You were part of a team, right, with Frank Smiley back then?
Frank and I did it together.
Who's a segment producer as well.
Correct.
Right.
So I learned a lot through Frank.
And you too, if I remember, spent a lot of time as a result at hanging out at comedy clubs, going to see comics.
Yes, we did.
I always wonder what that must have felt like from your end, because you must have been... aware that everyone was hyper aware the second you walked into that
you
club.
You were there, yeah.
It was great. It was super fun.
Yes, you're on a power trip.
But I wasn't really. Right. I didn't even know, you know? Right. I mean, I think, Sweens, remember Lucian?
Yeah, Lucian Hold was in charge of the club called The Comic Strip in New York City.
Where we went all the time. Yeah. And he was so nice and accommodating. Mm-hmm. And I again... It was my first time doing that, so I didn't know like how cool it was that I would just call Lucian and say, can you put so-and-so up? And he would put them up.
Right.
And yes, it was very fun and exciting and hard work. And, you know, I would stay at work until like 10 o'clock to go out and look at comics with Frank.
Wow, that's
So it was really around the clock.
Day.
Yeah.
It's a long day. It's great. It's a great job for a young person, you know?
And were there comics that just you remember, like the excitement of, I use the term discover, but seriously, like, you know, seeing someone and going, you know what, let's give them their first appearance on late night TV, which for a comedian, of course, is always back then and even now is kind of like the Holy Grail, kind of.
I remember seeing Gaffigan early on and really thinking he was great. And I saw Wanda Sykes in Montreal and we booked her from that.
Oh, awesome.
That's great. Did you have a sense of that, like competition or like, let's get him before another Dave Letterman does or the Tonight Show? Or it wasn't that.
I didn't
really.
There
wasn't that sense.
I didn't have that. And I also... looking back, was a little too precious about like what made me laugh. Like I kind of had no ability to say that, somebody did really well at that club. But if it didn't make me laugh, I kind of wasn't interested, which maybe is not that wise.
No, that's kind of like, you kind of just have to go with your gut, right? Otherwise, you've got no compass and then you're in big trouble.
Well, and how much pressure were you feeling? Like, I can't bring somebody in and then have them bomb on Conan's show? Or, you know, was that, were there conversations, did that happen?
After the fact, were you like...
I know it has happened, and of course I don't remember, but Frank would remember. But I do remember a horrifying experience where we needed a comic. We were always a little bit last minute, a little bit behind the eight ball. Like, you know, like if there was time in the show, we were going to need a comic in 2 days. It was all kind of haphazard. And,
there were so many slots to fill. It was just endless.
Exactly. And I remember Frank and I had seen a submission, I think, by somebody who for some reason I thought was funny. They had like one little thing that was funny.
Right.
And we flew the guy in from LA and went out with him to a club the night before his appearance. And we couldn't book him. It was bad.
Wow.
Oh, no.
I felt so bad. He just wasn't ready.
Wow.
So you were just like, you're welcome for the... plane ticket.
Yeah.
Right.
Enjoy your stay
Enjoy
in New York.
City.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The Met Museum has a great exhibit right now.
We can get you a tour of 30 Rock.
that was awful. Yeah, that was a bummer.
Well, Paula, so you were one of the only people we've talked to who was really there in those weeks leading up to the first show, too. What was that like? I mean, you were doing test shows. We know that. What was the feeling like in the office?
It was just like, let's just do this. You know what I mean? Like all hands on deck. I remember Conan doing a test show where he made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with Jeff Ross's assistant, Sally Horchow at the time. And she kind of, you know, she was full of charisma and loaded with personality. And she kind of walked him through.
The cooking segment. Yeah.
A cooking segment. Exactly.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Uh-huh.
He really was green.
It's almost kind of like the last shows at Largo. Like, I was saying the same thing over and over again to people, like, well, you know, we're winding up the show on June 24th and it's this and it's that and it's the other thing. But I forgot to anticipate that the show was ending.
Right.
So on June 25th, I was like, what just happened?
Yeah. How do I feel about this?
Right.
I will tell you, there was some crying involved.
Well, yeah.
I forgot that the show was ending. I thought it was just words I was saying, like the way I would say, we're going to be at Comic-Con the week of July 15th.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Exactly.
But I have heard you talk about enjoying the Office vibe there, at least in the early years, that it was just a really fun environment.
Well, Jesse, I will tell you, I do love... It's all I ever wanted was to work on a comedy show
right.
with like-minded people who want to laugh, want to have a good time, and also, I think, have a high excellence level. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like yeah. it's all fun and games until you need to work, and then everybody, you know, then it's work time.
Mm-hmm. Then it gets real serious.
Then it gets serious, and everybody knows when it's time to get serious, and I just loved it. I love the community of it.
Right.
I love the shared experience. I love the shared excitement, the shared tension, the shared relief. I just love it.
It's like being a part of the same organism.
Yes. Or a family.
Right.
Or a family. Yes.
I know that's
cheesy. If you have a fun family.
Right. I don't have brothers or sisters. So I think that's...
I don't either.
You don't?
Yeah, I'm an only child.
Only child.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Me too.
You two have so much in common.
We real do.
Wait till you hear Jesse's Chevy Chase story.
I can't wait.
I always compared it to putting out a newspaper because you had that deadline every day. The show
had to start.
And there's an audience there. They bring in the audience every day. So it's like, there's no escape. There's no postponing things, really.
Right.
So you did have that incredible pressure of being super serious. And there, you know, in the early days, I'm guessing there probably wasn't much time to blow off steam because you had to go right back to the mines for the next day's show. So
the only blowing off steam part that I recall is... Sweeners, do you remember when we didn't have a green room and Conan's dressing room on the sixth floor kind of functioned as like a staff lounge while we were taping?
That was before my time.
Oh, that sounds fun.
People would hang out there. It was really fun. It was a tiny room and we'd all squish in there and watch the show and laugh and then, you know, go back upstairs and figure out what was happening next.
Right.
And in the beginning, I was also casting and I would leave at whatever time... 8 o'clock maybe, and everything would be set. And then the next morning I would come in and everything would be changed and different.
Oh, just what was going to be on the show.
Right,
yeah.
Right. The scripts changed.
Things would get thrown out and
exactly.
Totally rewritten.
When did Conan start doing post-mortem meetings in his dressing room?
You know, I was late to those. I was a real late entrant.
Just to describe for the listeners, I mean, this isn't something I was often invited to, but... There was sort of a group of producers that would meet in Conan's dressing room after the show to talk about how everything went and
it would be
if they had to cut anything.
A quick talk down. But a lot of times it was just, there wasn't close analysis of the show that night. Don't you think, Paula? It was usually just more blowing off steam. And if something didn't go wrong, it was Conan viciously making fun of the stuff he couldn't really make fun of during the taping, he got to do right after the show. And
it was another performance, really funny.
Yes.
Conan at his best.
Yes.
And there would be riffing. And if you were lucky, you were not the victim of the riff.
Yes.
But even if you were.
You just had to take it.
It's got to take it. Take it like a man.
Everyone took it differently. But you had to take it. You just had to.
One time I booked a really bad guest, and Conan told me that I threw cold diarrhea at him.
We'll be back with cold diarrhea right after this.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell. Starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So after a while, after doing comics, you were doing actual celebrity guests on the show. Did you have any memorable bookings from that period?
I think I segued into second guests because
okay.
we still had like a leader, like a head of the talent
all
department.
Right.
And then it became kind of an all hands on deck. And, you know, because there were two guests a day and
right.
bookings were tough in the
right.
beginning. And I think I started to help out with second guests.
Were there second guests that you booked that, you know, would go on to become really big? And it's like you were kind of, you know, they become like old friends when they'd come on the show.
Well, Gwyneth Paltrow was one.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she started as a second guest?
She started as
clarify,
a second.
We should clarify, second guest was usually like a lesser known person.
Yes.
Than the first guest.
They'd be showing up after 1 a.m. The show started at 12:35 and like they'd come on at like 1:12 in the morning. And
yeah.
You know, I was just going to say, I'm sure there were a lot of comedians that were second guests that are now like huge stars.
Right, right.
Was it hard? I mean, did you ever feel like you had to sell the show to people in the early months of the show being on the air? Like, there's this guy, Conan O'Brien, he's got a late night show.
People kind of knew who he was because it was such a big story at the time.
Right.
But I think there was definitely a waiting period where people wanted to see how he did. But I think a lot of people wanted to give him a chance. Like, I know Halle Berry was on the first month.
And never again.
No, she came back. I think she liked him.
Yeah, she's on a lot.
Yeah.
I think there was generally some goodwill.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy. I mean, you know, booking a talk show, there's always someone else you want. And there's always another talk show that you see those people on. Like, it's just, it's a volume business.
Were there any, like, I've heard stories about, you know, guests who either just didn't show up. You know, they were stuck in traffic or, you know, would they, everyone turn to you and go, get a body in here, stat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We had.
Do you remember any harrowing experiences?
I do. I remember, well, I believe you both remember when Kumail Nanjiani
right.
didn't show up
yes.
and then we threw Sona out there.
Sona.
That was 27 years into it. By then we kind of knew how to handle it.
She was great.
But in the beginning, we would call Al Roker.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Because he was on the show so many times.
And he was in the building.
Right.
He was on the third floor and our studio was on the sixth floor.
Yes.
So it was literally, please just come up the three floors
just come
and
upstairs.
Do the show.
And he was so nice and he always did it. The thing is, New York is a great place to lose a guest last second because you have Broadway,
right.
you have SNL,
right.
and you have
mm-hmm.
the news.
That's a good
so
point.
So those are three go-tos
right.
for all you talent bookers out there.
Did you notice that difference once you were in Los Angeles with that? Because you would think there'd still be a ton of it, but maybe the logistics of getting to the studio is harder.
Yeah,
yes.
more spread out.
More spread out. It's a whole different world.
How so?
Because everybody's working, okay. everybody's on location. And if they're not working, they're not in publicity mode.
Right.
And maybe it's because of the spread out thing. Maybe it's because New York is so
right.
centralized that you're like, yeah, you know what? I'm a cab ride away. I can come down.
You know what? For comedy bits, which we could get to in a minute, but a lot of times we'd cast people based on, we'd be like, it's 2 p.m., the show's in 2 hours. I know they live in the Upper West Side versus yeah. someone who lives way out in Brooklyn. You're like,
Jack McBrayer is on his way.
Right.
Can we ask you do you remember what your proudest booking was? Like someone maybe, you know, it's like getting the white whale, like someone who just eluded you for a long time and then finally you book them.
Well, I can tell you about two that I remember. One you won't believe. Meryl Streep.
Ooh.
I booked for The Tonight Show.
I've heard of her.
Yeah.
And I love her.
Yeah.
And I booked her and I was very excited about that. Honestly, it's such a volume business that most of the time they didn't register. Someone I loved who I was super psyched to book because it took a long time was Regis.
Oh.
And I know that's really weird, but I loved Regis.
That's not weird. No, it's great. He's a human dynamo.
He is a human dynamo.
Did that take a while? Was he like, I'm a Letterman guy, right? Because he was on Letterman all the time.
It did take a while.
Yeah.
I would send him notes. You know, because I get fixated, as you guys might know.
Right.
I'd go to work and I'd go to the gym at NBC from like 9 to 9:45 right. and do the treadmill. And I would watch Regis and Kathy Lee. And I was also very late to that party. Like they had been on for years and were already really successful.
Right.
But as I started to watch, I just loved Regis. Then Gina Battista, who you both know.
Yes.
Another talent booker.
Was yeah. another uh-huh. booker at the show. I just started talking about my love for Regis one day in the office. And she said, he's my parents' best friends. He's at my house every weekend. So I started writing Regis notes because I would see something on the show that like made me laugh. And I knew that like I saw stuff that other people didn't see. And one time I read his book and there was a great story in there and I wrote him a note about it. And he would call me and he would write me notes. And
oh, wow. Oh, wow.
We became kind of friendly. And then I would see him at Gina's parents' house.
Uh-huh.
And then one time I wasn't really obsessed with this, but I was trying to book Spike Lee and uh-huh. it took forever. And finally, when he showed up, he said, you wore me out.
What a compliment.
I know.
No, that's great. Yeah. That's, I'm sure, most of the battle.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a lot of the battle.
Well, yeah. And what, just for our listeners and maybe myself, because I want to know more about the job of a talent producer. Say you book somebody. What happens then?
As soon as they're booked, I hand them off.
Okay.
I hand them off to the segment producer, who's the person that actually gets on the phone with them and goes over whatever project they're promoting.
The stories they want to tell.
They'll see the movie. They'll find out if they'll get on the phone with the guest and, you know, mine them for stories.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, my feeling was by the time they got there, they were already in the hands of the segment producer. The stage manager would, you know, check in with them right. to kind of tell them how it was going to go. So a lot of times I wouldn't meet them unless, of course, I was invested, if I liked them or if I had a relationship with them.
Yeah, if you were a fan.
Yeah, but I didn't have a need to say hi to everybody.
And also, I think you're really great at sussing out other people's, you know, comfort levels in every situation. A lot of guests, right before they go on a TV show, are wound up and they're very distracted. And, you know, it's almost like you want to give them a wide berth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. That's very true.
And how much of it involves making deals sometimes with studios or publicists, like in order to get this person, we also have to take this person.
There's some of that, but I really tried to have integrity about bookings. Like if I didn't want to book anyone that was not going that it wasn't going to go well. So there is some give and take. And sometimes I would have to say to Jeff, I want to give this person a spot because they gave us so-and-so and so-and-so, or, you know, this is an important relationship.
Right.
So there is some give and take, but I was very protective of maintaining the integrity of the show, except for the time I booked the cold diarrhea that I threw at Conan.
Oh, well, that I don't know if you could talk about this, but back then, being on NBC, there must have been, maybe it was just an accepted part of the deal, but having probably to book
for new NBC shows,
all this talent that appears on NBC shows, whether you liked it or not.
Yeah. You know, that's a funny thing because synergy only seems to work one way.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Downward synergy.
There would be super hot shows. Uh-huh. Must-see TV was all the rage.
Sure.
So there was not at that time a lot of synergy unless it was maybe somebody that was like a second or third character on a particular TV show.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very hard position to be in. I remember some second guests, like you're talking about, so the crowd had no idea who they were. And, you know, they were on a new NBC show. And they have to go out there and, you know, they've got to play it just right. Like if they come on too strong, the crowd, I'd see some acts come on and try to come on a little too brassy or too confident.
Oh, yeah.
And the crowd would kind of recoil, kind of almost like, hey, we don't know who you are.
Who the fuck are you?
Yeah, who the fuck are you exactly?
Right. Bad instincts.
Yeah, but that man, what a hard position to be in to know the best way to thread that needle, you know, in front of a cold crowd that doesn't know or care about you.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I saw someone recently on another talk show, like recently, and she is on one of my all-time new favorite shows, and she did another show and she came out in character and she, no one knew who she was, and she really went for it, and it did not go well because the crowd didn't know who she was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she came out in character with all this attitude and all this bravado, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not about our show. That's about another show.
Yeah.
You know, now another big part of your job, and what, please feel free to finally vent about it, is the writers were always pitching comedy bits with celebrities in them.
Yes.
They were always bombarding
you. Tom Hanks.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God.
All right, if he's not available, Madonna.
Oh, my God.
Paul McCartney will settle for. Mm-hmm.
Was that the bane? Did that drive you insane? Just the.
That drove me a little insane.
Because we'd aim high.
You'd aim high, and I knew for the most part that that wouldn't happen.
Right.
But of course, I reached out.
I think your phrase was, I'm happy to ask.
That is my phrase.
Yes, I'm happy to ask, which
to this day,
which we all quickly learned meant, oh, okay, this isn't happening.
You know what? More than the A-listers,
right.
I remember having to ask Joyce Brothers to do things, and I so wanted to say to her, she would do anything.
Yes, anything.
Always wanted to say to her when I called her, don't listen to this. Just say no. Right. Please say no. And she never did.
No. We even did a comedy bit finally about Dr. Joyce won't say no. Like just pushing the level. Oh so God. It was kind of meta. It worked on two levels. Yeah. It was saying she wouldn't say no to anything while making her do almost anything on the show. And there was, for a while there, a real stable of late night all-stars, Dr. Joyce Brothers, Abe Vigoda, of course.
Dr. Abe Vigoda.
He was beloved. Mary Ed Koch was one for a while.
Oh, my God. Yes, I forgot about him.
Yeah. Donald Trump for a while was like, oh, we need a stooge called Trump.
He won't say no.
But I think Abe Vigoda is the one everyone loved. He was just beloved.
I loved Vigoda.
Yeah.
I loved when we set him free into the wild.
The next to last show, I think Conan was winding up late night and part of the bit, he released his Abe Vigoda into the wild.
He said, go on now, get.
Right. Yeah. We let him out of a cage and said, run, Abe, run.
So good.
And then Conan just started sobbing. Abe was so charming. He'd come and he'd be like, I want to come, but I have a date.
A lady friend.
A lady friend. Oh. Is it okay if I bring her to the show?
And you said no.
Absolutely not. We have our standards.
Abe.
Wait, I have stories to tell you.
Yeah, oh, please.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to shut up.
Another time I was scrambling for a guest and I called a manager out here in LA and was kind of saying, do you have anyone in New York? And they said, no, but my friend saw Eric LaSalle at some hotel. Eric LaSalle at the time was on ER.
ER, right.
Yes.
So we sent Eric LaSalle some milk and cookies at the hotel and an invitation to join us on the show. And he joined us. He came in the next day.
It worked.
That's great.
It worked.
Milk
He's
and cookies.
Santa Claus.
Milk and cookies.
Santa Claus.
They will lure a guest
in. We had
to
build a chimney on the set. Here comes Eric.
No, but I love that. You're like getting little tips that lead you to guess.
Yeah.
One time I booked an award-winning actor for a comedy bit and something happened. He rehearsed and then Steve Hollander, the stage manager, was releasing him until showtime. And he misheard something and thought Steve said something that he didn't say. And he was like, I'm on to you. And he left. And I chased him down the elevator out to 49th Street and I couldn't get him back.
I'm on to you.
What?
Something like that. Like he got like real suspect, like, I know what you're saying, or I heard that. Something very strange.
Huh. Oh.
And he left, and there was no convincing him that what he thought he heard, he didn't hear.
No cookies or milk would lure him back.
He did not get cookies or milk.
Wow. Was there any fallout from that? Or it was just like, okay, no, that guy, I guess person's crazy.
That was it. I guess we scrambled and that bit was cut.
Wow.
Wow.
Maybe he didn't like the bit.
Yeah.
That could be.
He was looking for a way out.
That could be.
That may be more like it. I remember once we rehearsed a bit, and the ending wasn't good. And it didn't do well. And William Shatner was a guest that night, and he came early to shoot. We used to do a bit called Secrets,
yeah.
And he was going to shoot these William Shatner secrets. And on the fly in rehearsal, we came up with an ending to this other sketch that we could plug William Shatner into.
Mm.
And so I had to go back and pitch the idea to William Shatner. And I go back to him and I explain, you know, hey, we're doing a sketch and we came up with an ending with you in it. And we think it would be great. And he goes, was it the sketch I just saw you rehearse? And I was like, shit. I was like, yes, yeah. The very one. He goes, I'd rather not. Right to my, he just gave it to me right between the eyes.
He passed out, right?
But you know, we talked him into it.
You did?
The same way Jeff Bezos talked him into going to outer space. Yes, no, you know what? We somehow sweet-talked him into it a little bit. And
well, like, now we've got to find that sketch.
If anybody could do it, you could, Sweeners.
Yeah, we'll dig it up. The other person we used to, like if he was a guest, while he was there, we'd have him do, I felt bad because we would shoot all these pre-tapes with him to use down the line, like in subsequent days. Mr. T.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
He was so funny and so great in every sketch he was in that when we'd have him in the building, it was like,
yeah,
everyone, you know, mobilized to like, we got to get T on tape.
Let's get him to record an ending for
exactly,
for 10 future sketches.
He would walk down the hallway and put everyone in a good mood with this energy. He was amazing.
Such a sweet guy.
Oh, the best.
Yeah, were there ever people you were surprised were actually really nice or...
Oh, this is the stuff I don't remember. I'll just tell you, no, I would get home from work and my kids would say, who was on the show? And I would say, I have no idea. It's just gone.
Let me look at this piece of paper.
Yep.
Did your family try to pitch people to be on the show?
Oh my God, yeah. Listen to this. My father,
yeah.
Who was like a mini Regis, I think that's why I loved Regis so much. He was like my dad. My father lived out on Long Island and he would come into the city every once in a while. We'd have dinner, we'd see a show and he would, he was doing extra work at that time because he got into one of the unions. He came in once with his briefcase and it was full of TV show pitches and Conan came in my office and he pitched them to Conan.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Oh my God, it was so horrifying.
Oh my God.
It was indescribable. He opened the briefcase. I just like slid under my desk and Conan was so nice to him.
We only did half of them.
Conan was like, this isn't even the first dad I've fielded pitches from today.
Right. Sweeners, do you remember the Ashley McIsaac cock and ball situation?
Yes, I do.
That was a good one.
I haven't heard this.
This is really a Jim Pitt story, but he didn't tell it, so I'm going to.
It was a music act.
The guy's name, I think, was Ashley McIsaac, and he wore a kilt for his musical performance. And at the end, he did a high kick.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
The kilt went up,
mm-hmm.
and he was not wearing any undergarments.
Right.
As is traditional.
As one does. And so it was clear we had an issue, and Conan went into the control room and got on the PA and was saying, we have a cock and ball situation. We have a cock and ball situation.
Oh, he was so excited to get that PA.
It was pretty fun.
We were all impressed by whoever noticed it because
it was quick.
There was like three frames of cock and balls and somebody.
Well, what did you do? How did you fix it?
They blurred it.
They pixelated it.
They pixelated it. Yeah. Yeah. But it was very impressive that someone had a real eye for that.
I wonder who saw it.
Somebody on set just to screen for cock and balls.
Exactly. Exactly.
Cock and ball screener.
Yeah, they slipped us the old cock and balls.
Arr, tay, 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 tay.
Were there any bookings that your family was really excited about you getting?
I remember I was a huge Tina Fey fan, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
And one of my kids was with me when Tina was on the show and I introduced them and Tina said, "You have a cool mom."
Aww.
So that gave me some street cred.
Sure. That probably lasted until you got home.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That is great.
Well, Paula, we have to wrap up with you, but we were wondering if you have a favorite moment with Conan from over the years. It could be on or off screen.
Oh, my.
And that could just be the first thing that pops into your head.
Okay. Conan did something for The Simpsons early on when Bart was on Late Night and it was animated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Late Night with Conan O'Brien was in The Simpsons show and Bart was on the show.
Right.
Yeah.
And Conan said, "Only I may dance." Anyway, my children were huge Simpsons fans and they were watching that episode in my office and Conan came in and watched and it was just kind of a sweet full circle moment.
Oh, I love that.
That's nice.
Well, thank you so much, Paula. It's great to finally have you on the pod.
Yes.
Thank you for asking me.
And hear about the Day One Club.
Thanks, you guys. This was really fun.
Thank you so much, Paula.
Thank you so much, Paula. This is great.
You're so welcome. Great to see you.
You too.
Oh, it's great to see you. Thanks.
Thank you, Paula, for joining us. Paula's also been one of our longtime fans, and she often emails us after every episode.
That's true.
So if you want to get booked on the show, you gotta compliment us.
And we wanted to mention one other quick thing. Last week we had Brian Rich, a great writer on Late Night, with us, and told a great story about reapplying for his job, and we played a phone call. I can't even explain it. Anyway, if you enjoyed the Brian Rich story, you can go to Team Coco Twitter account to find the video of Conan bringing out Hank Flynn during Brian Rich's last episode.
Yes.
If that sentence makes sense to you, go check
it out.
It'll
be worth
it. Team Coco.
Yeah. It's the student becoming the teacher moment for Conan.
Exactly. And also, I just watched it again. Conan lists three things that all the writers hated on the show as being Brian Rich's great creations, which cracked
me
up. And we have a great listener question this
week. We do. I'll go ahead and read it here.
Please.
Dear Inside Conan, my name is Andrew Melton, and I live in Kobe, Japan.
What?
Oh. Here's my question. What is the process like of doing bits that involve audience members, like audience member theme songs or Craigslist ads? How do you scope out what the audience members look like, and how much time do you have to prepare the piece? Thanks, Andrew Melton.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. That's a fun question. I don't think we've talked about audience bits much.
I don't think we have. That's a really good question. And we also did a piece called The Audiences, which was a fake award show where we'd also have to scope out audience members for the bit.
Yeah, these were always exciting because they were one of the only things we did where there was always an afternoon scramble built in.
There was a giant scramble because it would be tracking down audience members when they first show up at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, they go check in the parking structure, basically, and are corralled there and asked to wait for, an hour while everybody checks in.
And we try to get them to buy t-shirts.
Right. Yeah, while they're trapped.
Right, trapped like rats.
Yeah, so we would go, the writers would usually hop on to a little golf cart and ride over there and walk around and kind of scope people out.
Yes.
Which is always a little awkward because I know they could tell that that's what we were doing. So they were sort of looking at us suspiciously.
It was like a livestock auction.
Yeah.
Where everyone's, tag those two over there.
Yeah, check that one's teeth.
And depending on what the comedy bit was, we'd be looking for different things to write about.
Yeah, sometimes we'd be making it up based on their look. So it would be like, well, this guy's got a Hawaiian shirt we can't ignore. So he's going in the piece. Oh, man. But so many times we would do something based on someone's look that they had at that time. Glasses or a hat or something.
Right.
And then they would go in to the studio and take their seat and then take that piece of clothing off.
Yes, take the hat off. I remember once or twice after we got burned by that.
Yeah.
And there was some joke about, you know, this hat a guy was wearing, or like I'd have to go up and sidle up to him before the show. And I was like, do you mind just keeping your hat on?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to explain any.
Right, because then you're tipping it off that they're going to be on camera.
Right. Although, did you notice as the more the show would go on, the more hammy audience members would get for the camera?
Yes.
I think it's all, I blame the smartphone and just.
Yeah, and people wanting to have the clip posting. To send their, like, to share on social media. Yeah, I remember there was even one case where the audience member was so hammy that we actually digitally removed them from the bit.
Yes. That is one of my favorite.
Yes.
That was a sketch. That was a different thing where there's an actor in the audience and he was behind the actor and was
mugging. Yeah.
He was so over the top. It was, he literally did ruin the entire sketch.
Yeah, he stole the show.
Right. And I don't know whose idea, maybe it was Conan's. I'm not sure whose idea it was after the show, but it was like, oh, you know what? We can literally CGI him out of that shot.
Which is such great revenge, because you know that all that person wanted was attention.
Right.
And so he must have posted later that night, like, watch me on Conan tonight.
Check it out. I stole the show. Yeah, I think Conan actually showed him being cut out the next night.
Yes.
Just to rub it in a bit.
I do remember one time somebody, I mean, we were always a little nervous because a lot of times we'd write jokes for people hoping that they'd have a good sense of humor. But then, you know, depending on their expression when their bit came up, like it might ruin the bit if they just seemed sad.
Right.
Or, you know, bummed out about it. Then it was like, oh,
or hurt.
Yeah. Or confused.
No, we would try to handicap how jolly they were.
Yes.
Beforehand as well. Like, I think they seem to have a good sense of humor.
Yeah,
about this.
Like, this person's going to be okay being called a shut-in.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But there was one time, I'm sure you remember, that an audience member got upset after they appeared on camera. And I can't remember if it was that they were actually upset about the content of the piece or if they just were like playing hooky or something and didn't want to be.
I think they were playing hooky.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, because it wasn't an offensive thing.
No, it wasn't. And they, so I had to go, it was literally like this guy immediately left the audience and was outside complaining loudly and went to talk to him. And yes, he just said, you know, I have a job and, you know,
I think
to
he had
show
cut
me.
Work. Yeah.
That's what we suspected, because it seemed so over the top and he was really upset. So we cut it out.
Yeah. But wasn't that a storyline on Saved by the Bell? Zach Morris is supposed to be sick at home and then he goes to a baseball game and he catches a home run and he's on camera.
Oh.
But they didn't offer to remove him from the show.
Oh man. I think those are three-parter.
Yeah.
Their first Saved by the Bell three-parter.
A very special Saved by the Bell.
Well, Andrew.
We did it.
Yeah. Please go out and enjoy Kobe, Japan.
Yeah. I'm assuming they have good beef there.
Nice, Jesse.
If anyone else has questions for us, we're taking them. You can call us at 323-209-5303. Don't worry. You can leave a voicemail. No one's going to answer.
Or you can email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
And we will see you next week with updates about Sweeney's swimming program.
Oh, no. Oh, what else can I sign up for? Something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
see you next week.
We like you. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.